Good morning, I'm Lily Lopez. Welcome to your morning conversation. Joining us this morning is Rekha Sharma Crawford, immigration attorney located in Kansas City. Thank you so much for being here, Rekha. And jumping right into the topic of discussion for today, COVID-19 has impacted virtually everyone, and specifically for the over 1 million students residing in the U.S. under an F-1 student visa. It's impacted whether or not they'll be able to reside in the U.S. any longer, or if they'll even be able to go home anytime soon. So do you mind going through the past couple months and how events unfolded?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of them, there was a lot of uncertainty when schools started to hold remote classes, and there was a lot of concern for students in terms of, you know, does that put them out of status, and what does that do for their immigration process going forward? And I think a lot of those issues obviously have now somewhat resolved, in the sense that, you know, people realized or learned that as long as they were complying with their school's requirements, they were not deemed to be out of status for their F-1 visas. But the secondary aspect now that I think most people will be turning to, especially with graduations, is, you know, what do they do with OPT? And OPT, of course, is occupational practical training, that limited amount of work authorization that students get in order to kind of get practical experience before they return to their home countries or find permanent employers. The current state of the economy is going to prove problematic for a lot of these students who may not be able to find people to with which they can use their OPT work authorization, and that may force them to actually leave or look at other places to see if there are other places in the world that they can go get that training.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then the original proclamation and then the expansion of it both revolve around non-immigrant visas. That's visas intended for a temporary basis, and these proclamations focus on temporary employment. However, like international students or like asylum seekers, it does indirectly affect other types of immigration. Do you mind going into the proclamation a little bit more, but also how it indirectly affects other types of immigration?
So this is part of the confusion that's going on right now, because there are so many proclamations, so many rule changes that honestly, I think even the attorneys are trying to get their heads around, you know, where all of this, you know, overlaps. So what I can say to that is that people need to kind of be very cautious in terms of making sure that, they are reading all of the pieces. So with regards to asylum seekers, there's a proclamation that came down that talks in specifics about, changes to how the individual can get work authorization and when they can't apply for work authorization. There is also a proposed regulation change, which is actually more dangerous than anything else, because they're going through notice and comment. So let me explain what that means. Is if an agency is going to engage in some form of policy change or rule change, they have to comply with the Administrative Procedures Act. And so what they're doing is they're saying, we are en masse changing this particular policy and the way that the asylum statute is interpreted by the agency. And in order to do that, we have to go through rulemaking, which is called notice and comment. And so what they're doing is they have proposed, they've given out the proposal for the rule change, which is layers and layers of restrictions, and have given the public 30 days in which to provide comments back. And so people who have concerns or are worried or, you know, just have questions, they can go onto the USCIS website and provide their comments. And they can say, you know, we don't think this is right, or we think this is right, or whatever their, whatever their position is. And then as part of the rulemaking process, the agency has to go through and respond to each of the comments and say whether they agree with them and therefore they should change what they're going to do, or not agree with them and not change what they're going to do. So that also takes time. And generally, the notice and comment period tends to be about 60 days. In this instance, it's expedited. No one really knows why. And it's been trimmed down to 30 days. So it's still open right now. And if anybody wants to go make a notice or provide a comment, they can certainly do that. But then once that's done, the regulations in whatever ultimate form that they are will get published, and those regulations have some very limiting language for asylum seekers. And honestly, it guts asylum to such a degree that, I mean, you're left with maybe a handful of people who may be able to apply for asylum. I mean, it fundamentally alters and guts the U.S. asylum system. So that, I think, is a completely different creature that people really need to be aware of if they're planning on filing for asylum.
Mm-hmm. And because proclamations are short-term, people have no idea what actually the long-term future will be like, and so there's a lot of uncertainty there. Do you mind going into whether there are even options for the immigrants impacted by the proclamations, the uncertainties they could possibly be facing?
You know, I think that's the greatest understatement ever. This in the last 3.5 years, there's been so much uncertainty and so much, you know, is unknown and shifts on so many ways within a rapid amount of time. So certainly I can understand individuals are confused and they are fatigued with all of the change. So yes, I think that is, I think it's by design, but you are seeing that clearly throughout all levels of immigration, whether it's DACA, whether it's, you know, legal filings, whether it's asylum, whether it's skilled workers, whether it's students. I mean, on every single level, you are seeing confusion, and you are seeing, you know, just policy change and process change rapidly occurring. Now, the other piece that's sitting out there that is also worth noting is that there is also a fee hike. So in the mix of all of this, the administration and the agency have signaled that they are going to increase all filing fees for applications by some 55%. So if you're looking at like the DACA renewal fee, which is like 400 and something right now, that would increase to almost $750 as a filing fee. While there's one attack on one side to say we're going to restrict people's ability to obtain work authorization and we're going to create this mass confusion in processes, but on the other side of it, we're going to work to increase filing fees so that it makes it cost prohibitive in a lot of instances. And that's kind of what you're seeing right now in the world of immigration. And so, of course, you know, initially the administration focused only on undocumented individuals. And we have seen that in the past months, they have now obviously targeted more towards lawful immigration. Additional uncertainty there. If you're a U.S. citizen, it doesn't apply to you. If you're a green card holder, it doesn't apply to you. So there are, if you're in the United States, it doesn't apply to you. So I think those are some good bright line rules to say, okay, you know, I don't have to worry about those. It's the non-immigrant visas or even the immigrant visas where someone doesn't already have an approved visa. That's what they're talking about.
And it's just kind of going back to the J visa. I know our school, Northwest, has a huge international population, mostly Indian. Just anything we didn't cover, how does that kind of affect students who are pretty young and trying to navigate this by themselves or with their family, like long distance? Or how does that affect students within the U.S. who are in the U.S., you know, obviously don't travel, but also students who had plans to come to the U.S.?
Well, I think for the ones that plan to come to the U.S., that's on hold, at least through the end of the year. I think that with those individuals who are already in the U.S. and plan to travel out of the U.S., I don't know how safe that is at this point. And for those who are here but are not planning on traveling, well, the proclamation doesn't impact them at all. So, I mean, I think those are some of the issues, though, that, you know, it's what makes this so difficult, because you're dealing with, you know, especially on the J program, you're dealing with students who, you know, want to go home and see family and want to be able to, you know, travel in and out without in compliance with their program, so that they're not sitting in some, you know, a friend's apartment waiting for the next session to start. So I do agree. I think it does create some incredible hardships and some incredible uncertainty for students. But unfortunately, at this point, you know, at least until after November, and I think after November, because I think the election results are going to tell us which trajectory this whole thing is going to go on. Because if there is another term for this administration, I think people have to be prepared to say that this is only going to get tighter and this is only going to get more difficult.
Circling back to international students and their immigration process, there could be a lot of uncertainty there, just because a lot of the process is a bit up in the air right now. A lot of things are on hold. Is there any particular worries about students potentially overstaying their visas and what potential consequences of that might be, and if there's anything they can do?
Well, I mean, I think even if they're in their grace period, for the most part, right, if graduating or classes are ending in May, they're going to be within their 60-day grace period to begin with. And so I don't foresee that being an issue. That, notwithstanding that the consulates are also closed. I mean, there are no interviews going on overseas at this time. So I think that piece of it, the agency has said, look, we're going to be flexible in making some of these determinations on, you know, could you leave, could you not leave? You know, individuals, depending on which country they were going to, that country wasn't letting people in. So I do think that the agency is mindful of that. I think the full, you know, how broad this is all going to come out and how they're going to, and how credible they are in their statements that they're going to take these with some flexibility. I think that's really going to come out once the government is back up and running at full speed.
And for students who want to get a better grasp of their situation, are there any resources that they can turn to?
Well, I mean, I think like right now, like I say, I think the big issue is there has been a push across, at least I know nationwide, there's been immigration attorneys, the American Immigration Lawyers Association, and other organizations have been trying to put as many resources and as much information out in the public domain as they can, you know, credible information. And as of everything else, I mean, again, with the government mostly shut down, there really isn't anything that anyone can do to lessen the you know, any of the situation right now. So there isn't anything. I mean, yes, they can file for OPT for sure, and that application can be pending. But beyond that, there's no way to make it faster. There's no way to get it quicker. There's no way to you know, pay extra and get a decision first. None of those things exist. So, I mean, I think there are certain channels that are still open, but for the vast majority, it's basically, you know, you take those steps and then you wait.
Mm-hmm. And as we end our discussion, what last words do you have for students out there dealing with their situation?
Expect more proclamations. Expect more restrictions. Expect, you know, delays. I mean, it was USCIS said that they were going to furlough 70% of their workforce. That only results in more delays. So just because you have an application filed, there's no one to adjudicate it, well, you're stuck in limbo. So I think these are some uncharted, some uncharted waters, in the sense that we know that things are going to be tough. They've been tough for the last 3.5 years. And I think for people who are trying to figure out, what do I do from now, you know, for now, I think they have to think of it and approach it in the most conservative way they can. What I want to leave them with is to not lose hope, not get overly anxious. I mean, it is a very anxious kind of a scenario. People are under stress, especially as some of the stay-at-home provisions and stay-at-home orders are extended, and there's some, you know, some places it's open, some places it's not open. I think the best thing for student people on student visas, what they need to do is say, look, how would I normally conduct myself? If you were going to leave, but you are unable to leave, then document that and show, you know, well, I can't go back because the country I'm going back to is not allowing me to return. Keep those documents so that if you ever have to explain to anyone in the future what's going on, you have that documentation that was contemporaneously put together. And then the rest of it is to stay informed. I mean, these are some unprecedented times, and I don't think that that can be undercut to where you go, oh, you know, this is all business as usual. Well, clearly it isn't business as usual. And I think that the agency understands that. I think globally people understand that. So I wouldn't get overly anxious. I wouldn't get overly fearful, and just stay informed.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Reka, for joining us here on Morning Conversation.
Of course. Thank you so much. You be careful.
That was Reka Sharma Crawford, immigration attorney located in Kansas City. I'm Lily Lopez, and this has been your Morning Conversation.